Welcome to the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I'm Kyla Daw, and I'm glad you decided to join us on today's episode of the show that is shaping how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. Rather than advice from experts, our listeners want to hear the insights and ideas from those who, just like them, are on the front lines every day, building meaningful relationships that translate into meaningful support for causes that they and their donors care about. Every week, we invite our guests to have a real conversation about what it means to be a fundraising professional. We're after a greater understanding of what it means to be one of the sector's critically important yet least understood roles, while giving honest answers to our profession's most difficult questions. Thank you for joining us in this episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Here's your host, author, fundraiser, and master trainer, Jason Lewis.
Hi, podcast listeners. My name is Jason Lewis, and I'm your host for the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Thank you for joining us today for the show that is shaping the way that the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. First, I want to thank our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by OneCause, leader in online, mobile, and virtual fundraising software. OneCause supports over 6,000 nonprofits to reach more and raise more with innovative solutions. You can visit their virtual fundraising resource center at www.onecause.com. I also want to tell you about what's coming up in July. Our team at Responsive want to invite you to participate in 6 hours of online CFRE-approved training. I am talking about a soup-to-nuts fundraising philosophy that will ensure your organization is ready for the road ahead. No one on the planet is going to offer you tools as researched, as tested, and as sustainable as our four frameworks. If you'd like more information about partnering with OneCause, or more information about our upcoming webinar series, look for information in the show notes. After you do, shoot me an email and let me know that you did. Now let's introduce today's guest. Hi, Rachel. Thank you for being my guest today on the Fundraising Talent Podcast. We've spent a few minutes getting to know each other a little bit. We have not had the privilege of being in the room together. We'll certainly work that out in the very near future. But in the meantime, why don't you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Hello. Well, my name is Rachel Muir. I am a recovering executive director. And what I do for a living is train people to be better at their fundraising. I've spent my entire career in the nonprofit sector. I started in nonprofit right here in my hometown of Austin, Texas, when I was 26 years old, called Girl Start to empower girls in math, science, engineering, and technology. And I spent my whole career in fundraising in the trenches. And that's where I learned everything I know about fundraising.
So as you and I were talking about before we hit the record button, you living in Austin and my wife and I having become very fond of Austin, I have to ask you, what's your favorite hotspot to stop for a sandwich or something? The food in Austin is quite remarkable, having formerly had a business partner there. So where's a hotspot where you and your family would go to eat if you could this evening, for example?
Oh my goodness. The food in Austin is absolutely amazing. Luckily, during this pandemic, so many great restaurants have pivoted to doing curbside, so you can still enjoy the great food that you love and adore. I live next to some really great restaurants. Picnic is one. Peach Tortilla is another. Taco Flats is another. I love Mexican food. Mexican food is my jam. And we just have, as you know, we have great queso. We have great margaritas. We have great breakfast tacos. We're pretty famous for our breakfast tacos.
And the, what's the name of the bookstore, the local bookstore? My wife and I, last time we were there, we were there for 3 days doing meetings with my business partner, but we spent, what's it called? What's the name of that bookstore?
Book People?
Yes, Book People. Yeah. Yes. Yes. So I think we spent when my wife and I are traveling, we would prefer to spend an entire evening, you know, going to a local restaurant and then spending 3 hours in a bookstore like that rather than going to a movie or something, or even going to a play or something. And so I thought the fascinating thing about Book People was that you could walk around the store, and if you found one of your favorite authors, sometimes they had signed, like I picked up autographed copies of some of my favorite authors there. And that was pretty remarkable. That would be one of the first places we would head straight to if we were back in Austin.
Yeah, it's a great company. It's a great spot. And they do a lot of events there with authors, local authors, and guest authors.
So Rachel, you and I decided to sort of host the, this week we're hosting sort of the Rachel and Jason party to talk about COVID-19 and fundraising and maybe be a little upbeat and enthusiastic about, you know, not sort of doom and gloom, but maybe, you know, a little positive. And we talked about the idea of first in this session, this particular first half of our conversation, some of the lessons that we're learning. And then when we have you back on Thursday, we'll talk about sort of where we're going to take those lessons and where we anticipate fundraising going in the future. Does that sound like a
fantastic? And yes, we're focusing on the bright spots of this pandemic for fundraisers.
Yeah. So tell me, what do you think? I've got some ideas in mind, but I want to hear what lessons you're learning. So what do you, and for the sake of our listeners, I have not heard any of this. She hasn't heard, Rachel hasn't heard my opinion. So we might throw each other for some crazy loops and we don't even know if we're going to agree. So Rachel, what do you think? What are the lessons that we're learning?
Gosh, I mean, I think that fortune favors the brave. And I think we're seeing record giving amongst organizations that are actively out there fundraising and haven't stopped and haven't like let this slow them down and, you know, not being paralyzed by fear, but by being out there and being nimble and being fast on your feet and communicating your needs to your donors and inviting them in to help you. So I'm seeing a lot of organizations who have raised double what they raised this time last year. They haven't missed a beat. They've communicated with their donors. They've shown their donors how deeply they care. They've developed deeper relationships with their donors. They're doing fantastic with their fundraising. And I'm really proud of those organizations because fundraising takes courage on a good day and it takes a lot of courage, especially now. So that's something that I'm seeing that I'm really excited about. People being brave, being willing to be out there and be vulnerable and also being willing to try new things, try new tools to communicate with donors, try different ways to communicate with donors, and not be afraid of putting themselves out there and deepening those relationships.
What is that, Rachel? I'm always interested to, when someone describes an organization of the type that you just did, I'm always eager to understand and help other people sort of know and understand if they themselves might be working for that organization. So let's say, for example, that I'm a fundraiser and I'm listening to this and I'm thinking, I think my organization's been brave, but I'm scared to death right now. And so I don't even know that we're being brave. So what does that even look like to you? Because some people I don't think some of us know when we're being confident, you know, because when it's mixed up with that vulnerability and messiness of what it means to be confident, there's still that sort of that pinch of doubt in what we're doing.
Sure. I totally get it. I absolutely get that 100%. And I think, you know, being brave in fundraising in a pandemic is really not stopping your fundraising. It's continuing to do your appeals, doing your direct mail appeals, doing your email appeals, you know, pivoting to like have virtual visits with donors, overcoming the naysayers. I feel like fundraisers now have so many headwinds working against them because there's just keeping yourself motivated and sane and staying focused on your goals and your priorities. There's that. And that alone is challenging. And if you've got kids at home or a spouse or a partner at home, and you may have, maybe for me, I've always worked at home, but my husband doesn't work from home. So having him and my twins at home and us all working together is a totally new dynamic. But for fundraisers, they may be overcoming a lot of other external dynamics too, like board members who are opposed to them fundraising, or a CEO who's afraid of fundraising right now, or some critic within the organization who's opposed to fundraising. And it's being willing to fundraise right now that's going to really determine their success and their survival. And that's a huge responsibility to have on your shoulders on top of keeping yourself motivated and keeping yourself sane overcoming those objections and having to win that person over to get out there and continue to fundraise. So if you've encountered that already, you likely know it and are thrilled and happy to be, you know, out on the other side, successfully fundraising and having overcome the naysayers. I'm seeing responses all over the map. I'm seeing a lot of organizations who are not missing a beat. I'm seeing a lot of amazing executive directors and development directors who are really calm and cool in a crisis and who are getting in front of this and fundraising. And I'm seeing other organizations who are struggling to convince other people within their organization that they should be fundraising right now. And, you know, the results kind of speak for themselves. A lot of organizations who haven't stopped fundraising and have ramped up their fundraising efforts are seeing record results. And those that aren't fundraising aren't seeing that. So they kind of speak for themselves.
Is there I had a guest on here who she was organizing a very successful, very quick pivot from an event, you know, an in-person event to a virtual event. And she described a very remarkable sort of pivot that was quite I'm not a big fan of special events myself, but I had to say, I told her at the end of it, I said, man, I think you've rekindled my interest and enthusiasm for events, because it was just such a remarkable sort of story. But I think, Rachel, what I most appreciated in what she was sharing, and this sort of ties to your use of the word vulnerable that you sort of kicked off the conversation with a few moments ago, is this notion of messiness. And there was some of the things that she described was sort of the imperfection that the virtual event sort of revealed. You know, they couldn't, because they had to pivot so quickly, they revealed some of the vulnerability and the imperfection, and everything didn't run as smoothly as they wanted to. But the flip side of that is she thinks that they did raise more money. They raised more money. They felt more real. They engaged another 20% of the donors that they would not have otherwise engaged. And it just makes me sort of wonder if some of this, some of the predictability that we've been trying to sort of build into these very tightly well-streamed, sort of well-orchestrated sort of appeals, whatever the effort might be, is maybe some of the things that if we let go of that, we can mm-hmm. do some really cool stuff. Do you sort of follow my line of thinking here?
I totally agree with you 100%. I think it's, you know, I feel like what you're really talking about is that authenticity, and they were willing to be vulnerable. They were willing to be imperfect. That's another great word. But yeah, that authenticity. And I feel like this is a real defining moment, because picking up the phone and calling a donor to check on a donor, we're all marinating in the same negative news headlines, and we're all distant. And this is an opportunity for fundraisers who are brave to connect with their donors in ways that they haven't before. You know, picking up the phone, just talking to donors, just checking in on donors, just seeing how donors are. You have an opportunity in this pandemic like you've never had before to actually get your donor on the phone and have a conversation with your donor and just have a conversation with them that you might not have ever had the luxury of having the time or the ability to do before, you know, especially, I mean, maybe you tried before, but you couldn't get through. So, but it does take organizations who are willing to do that and who are willing to step up and pick up the phone and call donors or text donors and reach out to them. A lot of your donors are worried about you, and they're wondering how you are and how they can help. And they're feeling just as disconnected as the rest of us. So it's an opportunity to connect with them, and one that they'll never forget you for.
If you were sitting here talking to you and I are sort of young veteran fundraisers, I guess we could call ourselves. We've been around a while. But if we were talking to, say, somebody who's 2 years in, and he or she has, you know, they've been to all the seminars, and they've been to, you know, they've read all the manuals, they know every how to that you would expect someone to know in 2 years of fundraising, they've been to AFP meetings, so forth, all that stuff. But they said there was no book, there was no manual, there was no breakout session at the last, you know, conference that I went to on how to navigate COVID-19. Yeah. What would you be saying to that person?
Yeah. I mean, I think I would be telling them to be brave, and I would be telling them that now is the time to show that you care. And I would tell them to be patient and take care of themselves and be willing to forgive themselves. But I would tell them that this is their opportunity to connect with their donors, and this is their opportunity to deepen those relationships. And this is an opportunity, you know, like in the example that you shared, to be authentic and vulnerable with people. And not everyone is comfortable with that. But the organizations that are comfortable with really being with people in that genuine and authentic space, those are the fundraisers who are going to really deepen their donor relationships and really thrive in a time such as now. And I think that those relationships will always be stronger for it.
I have seen some in my career. I have seen some really authentic mail that was mass produced. But then I have also seen, and we've all seen, some very inauthentic mail that's mass produced. For the same young person that's asking you this question, and he or she is trying to carry out that authentic appeal letter that's going to go out to thousands or, you know, hundreds of thousands, you know, who knows what the number of people that it's going to go out to. How does it suggest authenticity?
Well, it's personalized, and depending on your sophistication in a letter like that, you could do a lot of hyper-personalization just based on the tools that you're using and what you might already know about your donor. It should be written in the first person. It should have, a sense of urgency, descriptive details about the work that you're doing and how it's helping, and, you know, how, you know, you've got to tie your donor making a gift to the kind of impact that they're going to have, you know, how their gift is going to make an impact, what happens if the money isn't raised, descriptive details about who you're serving and how this gift is going to help. But yeah, I would say personalization, authenticity, first person, writing in the first person, using donor-centered language, using you, those are all things that are going to have a bigger impact. I am kind of a nerd about using technology tools, and I really love using some of my favorite tools that I talk a lot to fundraisers about all the time, but especially now. One of my all-time favorite tools to use to like cut through the noise and connect with your donors is video email. I'm a big fan of video email. I use video email. I've been a customer of a company. I don't work for this company, but I love this tool. It's called BombBomb Video Email. And it's a really great tool to use to shoot a quick video of yourself, send it to a donor. It's very personal and it's very real, and it's a really great way to just be very genuine and be very human to your donors. So I love using tools like that to connect with people.
Is there a lesson? We mentioned for a moment there, you referenced board members, for example, and that's one of the things that I don't think I'm seeing a lot of us in sort of the consulting ranks talking about yet. Is sort of the lessons learned or the lessons to be learned as it relates to board members. What are you thinking about that? I mean, so we were talking about the 2-year veteran. I mean, the 2-year, you know, newcomer to fundraising, but what about the board member who's been sitting on a board for 6 months, you know, came on the board in the fall and all of a sudden COVID hits and they don't know what their role is anyway, much less as it relates to fundraising?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. It's funny you say that. I just did a training last week on board members, and it was specifically called How to Change the Board That You Have. I would say for anyone who's new to a board, this is a really important time to be on the board of an organization, because ultimately board members are responsible for the financial health of an organization. So I would say, you know, if you're a board member, this is your time to give to the organizations that you are a part of and give generously. And I would say, you know, this is your time to really step in and ask, you know, you can offer to help the staff with, you know, can I help you with making calls to donors? Can I make thank you calls to donors? Can I make check-in calls for donors? I'm a really big fan when it comes to board members and fundraising. I tell people fundraising is not a one size fits all kind of endeavor. And I like to give people, new board members especially, really like the, you know, Baskin Robbins has like 31 flavors. And I like to give them like the 31 flavors of how they can support fundraising, because it's not a one size fits all. And certain things are going to appeal to some people that won't appeal to others. And the more choices you give board members and how they can support fundraising, the more likely they are to sign up for what they're passionate about and do a better job doing it. So that would be my advice. For board members, that this is a great time to be a board member. This is a great time to step in and support the staff, and you know, help the staff with developing those relationships with donors. And if you're listening to this and you're frustrated with your board, this could be a really great opportunity for you to spark the kind of change that you want with your board, because this could be a prime opportunity for you to have a, you know, create a graceful exit for a board member who isn't performing and may be happier to move on to greener pastures.
Okay, so I promised you before we hit the record button that I always like to throw a curveball at my guest about two-thirds in, and I promise this one's not, I don't think this one will scare you, but I don't think it'll get me in trouble for asking either. Sometimes I get in trouble there after we're done recording. They're like, why the hell did you ask me that?
Now I'm intrigued.
So we've talked about what it means to sort of, what are the lessons learned for the sort of the young fundraiser, the board member, but what about for those of us like you and me, those of us who are in these consulting roles? Is COVID-19 teaching us things that are there lessons that we're learning? I tend to think that a lot of us are learning that the world is not nearly as predictable, and that some of the ways that we're going to have to serve our clients are not nearly as, it's not going to be nearly as linear, and it is going to, I'd love to use the word messy. I think we need to be more comfortable getting into the messiness with our clients. We can't give them so many sort of prescriptive sort of solutions. Do you think people like you and me are learning lessons, and maybe what might some of those lessons be?
Yeah, I think we're absolutely learning so many lessons. I mean, lessons about being prepared for a crisis, lessons about, you know, being flexible and adaptable. I mean, I think this is going to permanently and profoundly change the way that we work. And I think that for the nonprofit sector, obviously working from home, and for all sectors, working from home is going to be very, very transformative and a lasting change that I think we're going to see. I think for our sector, in particular for the nonprofit sector, I think we'll see a reduction on event dependency for a lot of organizations who may have really relied on special events. But yeah, I mean, I think this crisis has taught us all a lot about flexibility, about being prepared for a crisis. And I think that for organizations who are willing to really look at it, I think there are a lot of deeper, more profound questions that we can be answering for ourselves around how do we want to be when this is over? You know, what are the pieces of our culture that we want to you know, magnify, and what are the things about our culture that we want to say goodbye to, that we want to change? And, you know, and I think that's true for the organizational culture. I think that's true for the leadership of the organization as well. And I think those are some really profound questions, like, that we have an opportunity to really make permanent and lasting change around, whether it was a dysfunctional board that you have before that you want to change completely, or whether it was, you know, being more nimble on your feet as an organization. I think that, you know, it's really, there are a lot of opportunities around deepening relationships with donors. And I think there's a lot of opportunities around just being willing to try new things and be more innovative than you may have been before, because you can't, you know, we don't have the control that we thought. It was really much more of an illusion than we knew before going into this.
Do you think we'll look, people like yourself and me, and I think you used the word coaching before when you introduced yourself, before we hit the record button. Do you think that the role of the consultant will look more like the coach who knows how to ask better questions? You know, it's that some of that coaching training I've had where we're taught how to ask better questions rather than the consultant who's got all the right answers. Do you think that's going to sort of be one of those lessons that we've learned, is that when you're trying to do like some of the things you just described with our clients, we've got to get better at just asking really good, profound, transforming sort of questions so that our clients can sort of begin to work some of these things out in their head?
Yeah, I think those really, I agree with you completely, because I think that, you know, people have such different appetites for change. And I think organizations that are willing to try new things and willing to look at stuff completely differently, I think that they are going to really, you know, grow from this. And I think that organizations who are just kind of waiting for things to go back to normal are going to have a much, much rockier time. But I think it really is around asking yourself those questions around, what do I want my board to look like? What are my donor relationships going to look like when this is over? And what do I have to do today to make sure that I have the relationships that I want? Because it isn't something that you can just like stick your head in the sand and just, oh, well, I thought I'd come back to you after you know, this pandemic was over. Crisis is the time to show that you care. So yeah, I think there is a lot of opportunity, but it really just depends on, you know, the questions that we're willing to ask ourselves and how much we're willing to lean into that change to make that change happen.
Rachel, I've had you for about 25 minutes, and you're going to come back on Thursday. So you've been sort of our wise professor for this half, and we're going to let you be our fortune teller on Thursday. You're going to tell us everything that you think the future of fundraising is going to look like in a sort of a post-COVID-19 economy. But before we wrap up, Rachel, if somebody's listening to us and they've heard something, they've heard some of your wise observations and lessons that you've learned, and they want to reach out to you, how would you suggest that they do
that? Yeah, they can check out my website. It's rachelmuir.com, rachelmuir.com. I have oodles of free resources up there, guides for stewardship guides. I've got Get the Visit, Nail the Ask, all kinds of great tools and templates and guides to help fundraisers with their fundraising.
Rachel, one of the things I always ask individuals like yourself who are eager to hear from someone, let's say that 2-year fundraiser we were talking about a few moments ago, what's the, sort of the most enthusiastic sort of thing you want to hear from them if they reach out to you? You want to know what about them?
Oh, I'd love to know what kind of innovative new things that they've tried with their fundraising since this started, and what happened. How did it work?
That's good. Yes, Rachel, it's been a pleasure. We'll look forward to talking to you again later this week.
Awesome.
Have you read the book that nonprofit leaders and fundraising professionals alike are calling a must read? In this pocket manifesto for today's fundraising professional, Jason deconstructs why many of us find ourselves working for organizations where we cannot accomplish our goals. These same organizations are notorious for rapid turnover and high donor attrition. To avoid this all too familiar path, Jason offers direction from those who want to be recognized and admired for their work. The war for fundraising talent challenges our ingrained beliefs and assumptions about how effective fundraising really works, and it questions the prevailing wisdom hiring decisions and donor behavior. Published by Gatekeepers Press, The War for Fundraising Talent is now available on Amazon and other major retailers. We want to thank you for listening to today's episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's show and hope you will come back for next week's interview, where we will discuss with those on the front line who are defining what it means to be a fundraising professional. If you'd like to be a guest on the Fundraising Talent Podcast, visit our Facebook page or email Jason at jason@lewisfundraising.com. In your email, be sure to tell us about where you work and why you believe you would be a great addition to the upcoming lineup. Thank you again for joining us today, and we look forward to you being a part of the continuing conversation as we shape how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent.